local station board candidates and to vote in this election, visit elections.pacifica.org. All ballots are due on Friday, October 15th. Make your voice heard.
That's right. Time is running out, so look in your spam bucket or your promotion folder. Find your ballot if you haven't already voted. Got to get those votes in very quickly. You're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org, 9 p.m. Time for On the Count.
On the Count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.5 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain the fastest growing industry in the country.
My people inside and out, where you at? You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal Reform Report. My name is Andre Ward, and as always, eternally grateful and gratified to be able to come in through the prison gates and through the prison walls by way of the airwaves, and are thankful to all of those who remain in activist and advocacy mode, representing the issues that are most important to you. Tonight, we have a really powerful show toward the latter part of our show, which is extremely important. But we're also going to be talking about just some issues that are happening within the criminal legal reform movement, talk about the importance of Hispanic or Latinx Heritage Month, which we know is every day. But before we get into that, just want to check in with the rest of the team and see how folk are doing. We have our senior producer, Harmony, with us, and our Latinx Affairs producer, Marty, with us. Harmony, how are you doing this evening?
All my people, I am fantabulous. Where are you at? Greetings to you this evening, and hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for being with us. I am fired up and motivated as usual. You know it's a lot going on this evening. I hope you guys have tuned in to us and are not looking at the rap artist award show or the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. Yes, guys, I know you guys still have on the radio, turn down the TV and listen to WBAI. Shout out to the women. And so many things are unfolding for women on Rikers, but we are definitely shouting each one of you out. Thank you to my partners. So nice and good to be with you this evening. And thank you for listening to our listening audience and to our friends and family. We appreciate you. Marty?
Hola, mi gente. ¿Cómo está? Pa'lante lo movemos. How are you guys? I am doing well. forward we are moving with all of this, all of the changes that's happening that I'm really excited about. And I'm grateful to be here, grateful to bring the news to you all, and even more grateful that you are witnessing the work of the individuals behind the scenes, because we are working and we are working for change, and it is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for the first part of our show, we'll have some open discussion. I know that our phone lines are also open, 212-209-2877, I think is the number to call, that you can, you know, make a comment or something. And we have our amazing engineer, Max, who joins us as well. So you can call in if you have any comments or thoughts you'd like to share relative to criminal legal reform issues. But at the last part of our show at 9:30, we're going to be joined by Jeffrey Brennan. And Jeffrey Brennan will talk to us about a new bill that is being advanced, and it's called Treatment Not Punishment, or Treatment Not Jails Act. And I think it's a really important bill, because we know historically, especially among Black and brown people, substance use issues have been criminalized, ranging from marijuana use to heroin use to cocaine use. And if we look throughout history, we know even with crack cocaine and the 1 to 100 gram law that was out, as it relates to if you're being in possession of one vial of crack, rather, versus like a certain amount of grams of cocaine, that you were sentenced for more time possessing one vial of crack cocaine versus maybe over an ounce or so worth of cocaine. And we knew that, and we know, still know that cocaine in its powder form is used mostly by upper class, mostly white people. And so Black and brown people in their use of crack cocaine had been criminalized, much like most substances that are used by Black and brown people are criminalized. So treatment rather than jail is really, really important as an alternative to criminalizing people, and obviously filling up jails unnecessarily. And so we'll be joined by Jeffrey at 9:30 to talk about the Treatment Not Jails Act, what that means, why it's important, and give some historical context about why there's a need to have a Treatment and Not Jails Act. But obviously we know some things are happening, as Madi and Harmony said earlier. We know that Rikers Island now is under tremendous scrutiny, and obviously Harmony and Madi weigh in, and you as a listener can join by calling 212-209-2877 is the number to call to make a comment or share a thought about what you think about what's happening at Rikers. But we know right now Rikers Island is under tremendous scrutiny. There's been an increase in the population amid COVID-19. There are about approximately 6,000 people on Rikers, up from maybe 4,000 a few months ago. And when we look at the pandemic that is that we're experiencing now, and what that means for people on Rikers, right? It creates a whole range of challenges within the jail itself. Then on top of that, about 1,800 correctional officers are no longer reporting to work, many of whom have AWOL. And that is also contributing to some major challenges as it relates to an increase in violence, a lack of support for the people that are incarcerated or detained there. All of these things have contributed to what we see now on Rikers Island. And there's an absolute need to close Rikers, which is slated to close in 2027, but should be closed sooner. There's an absolute need to decarcerate. And while Governor Hochul has just signed into legislation the Less's More Act on September 17th, there's still a lot more that needs to be done. Over 167 people or so have been released from Rikers Island, but it still does not address the real need to decarcerate and ultimately close Rikers Island. We also know that those folk who are on Rikers Island for technical parole violations should be released as it relates to the criteria set out by the executive order that the governor has signed that's supposed to be fully implemented in March of 2022. And then the increase in jail population of Rikers Island is contributing to the fact that judges aren't really honoring bail reform as they should. And bails are still being set for minor or misdemeanor offenses and other offenses that don't require people to be jailed simply because they cannot make bail. And so there's the factor of judges not honoring bail reform in a way that reflect not putting people in jail. And if they were to honor bail reform in that way, then the jail population obviously would shrink on Rikers Island. It wouldn't ameliorate or make completely better the conditions there, but at least it would reduce the population, create other opportunities as alternatives to get people connected to the services they need around substance use issues, around mental health issues or SMI, severe mental health issues, and other things that people need in their communities, like training and jobs, et cetera. But these are some of the things that are happening on Rikers Island. And obviously there's an absolute need to close down Rosen Singer Jail for the women, but I'll turn it to Harmony and Mahdi for some other commentary and some thoughts as well. But 212-209-2877 is the number to call. 212-209-2877 is the number to call if you'd like to share a comment or thought relative to what's going on at Rikers Island. Harmony, Mahdi?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So I think that we have, I always like to take a look back and then a look forward. And I appreciate the work that has been done by our advocates, by our agencies, by our families, by our WBAI staff, others that are on the vineyard working really hard to make sure that we do close Rikers. And so we know that our new governor is talking very seriously about and having conversations around making sure that we close it sooner rather than later. We know that she is state, but I think that she is also working with the city in order to make that happen. Shout out to WCJA, which has a women's task force who is really pushing for the 300 and something women to leave Rikers Island sooner rather than later and finding a safe haven for them. And thank you to all those who are working on that push and that effort. 10 years ago, it probably was 10,000 individuals on Rikers Island. And as of today, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's probably about 4,000. So prior to 10 years ago, it might have been about 15,000. So the work is slow, but it's happening. Unfortunately, people had to lose their life. Families had to lose their family members. And some people said to me, even up until today, that it was hard to believe some of the things that the news said was happening on Rikers Island. So just so we can be clear, the things that people said that happened on Rikers or some of the programs that you might have seen are true. 11 people lost their life on Rikers this year. And that's not a made up fact, that's facts. And so we find it very believable, and we know that Rikers must be closed, and we must do not only close Rikers, but do something different in the way that we incarcerate individuals and the way that we treat other human beings. We're talking about Rikers now, but we're also talking about mental institutions. We're also talking about where we place people when we think that they have done something or harmed someone or harmed themselves. We have to rethink the way that we, instead of thinking the way that we have in the past, and make sure that we are supportive and helping people to get themselves to wherever it is that they feel that they should be, and making sure that they get the help that they need. And so whether or not we think it's good, bad, or indifferent, if everybody is calling it an elephant, then I believe that we need to check it for some peanuts, right? And so I'm from the old school. So I believe that we must. People are listening at Rikers this evening. People are listening at Bedford and Taconic this evening. People are listening in some of the building, the Kings County Hospital building, where they can't leave that entity, and their minds may not be as focused as others, but they need help. And so it's the same thing with people who are unfortunately incarcerated. They've done something they're not so proud of. And so if we think being punitive on top of already in a paradigm of punishment is helping, then I think we also need to be checking ourselves. I am proud of the work that people have done. I am proud of the new commissioner and the first deputy that has been placed on Rikers. I think they need a chance to be able to shift the environment. And I think that if people really want to know whether this is factual, whether it's true, or whether it's just the rhetoric of the news, please reach out to some of the agencies that we constantly lift up for you. Reach out to them or reach out to On the Count, and we will definitely have you sit down with you or even give you some insight, some further insight to some of these agencies and direct contact with people so that you can have real conversations and make real informed decisions. And so as opposed to just thinking that it's a bit of rhetoric. Thank you again to our listeners for understanding and many of you folding clenching arms with us as we stand in solidarity for those who are doing their freedom in a different type of way. But we really do appreciate and understand that you may not quite get it, but trusting that One of the Count is bringing you the information and we'll show you the information factually if you come out and join us or connect to some of the entities that we constantly bring to you. It is about lives. And I think that we believe that it's important. And I think by you listening, you believe that it's important as well. Thank you so much. Marty?
Yes, thank you for all of that, because our listeners really, really need to understand that there is a fight, there is a war going on for us to close Rikers Island. And I want to piggyback off of something that you mentioned. You mentioned the commissioner, first deputy commissioner. I agree with that because they walked into a heck of a show. Into and inherited years and years and decades. This within a week, within a month, maybe within a year if we close it down. However, many agree that Rikers is beyond repairable. It just needs to close down. What are they doing in the meantime? They're present. They are present on the island. Their office, deputy commissioner, the first deputy commissioner's office is actually on Rikers. And he's present every day. And he's socializing and speaking with those that are incarcerated and speaking with the officers to assess what their next move is going to be until they do close the island down. So I do want to give credit to them, and I ask everyone to please be patient with them as they inherited decades and decades of issues, and they are addressing it. That I know based on our conversations in our previous show with them. So thank you, Harmony, for bringing that up, because that's something I always wanted to voice, was give them a chance. They didn't create these issues. They inherited these issues, and they're dealing with them as best they can. So let's give them a chance for sure.
Yeah, so it's important. Thank you for those that commentary, Harmony and Madi. It's important, as we're saying, that our listeners understand what's happening on Rikers Island, how that impacts the broader criminal legal reform movement, especially as it relates to fair chance for housing, especially as it relates to the Treatment Not Jails Act, as it relates to less is more, and ensuring that less is more remains as it is, unadulterated, without any approach to roll it back, like bail reform. And so it's really important when we talk about people who are being jailed for minor technical parole violations and not going to jail because of that, it's important that that be supported and that the fear-mongering that ultimately is a counter-narrative to really meaningful legislation like Less is More has to also be challenged. The notion of dangerousness, which is promulgated throughout the media, consistently shapes public opinion, perception, and ultimately makes people side more with this idea of public safety without really understanding facts. And so our advocates, the criminal legal reform movement, is also very invested in public safety. But from the vantage point where it affirms the humanity of all, those who may have committed harm and offended in different ways and who have come home to be given an opportunity and fair chance to live a life of contribution, as well as those who may never have experienced those things. But it's about equity, and it's about justice, and it's about ensuring that public safety is in the front, but public safety, which means people are given opportunities to live in a space of public safety. So you offer training and jobs to people, right? You create spaces for people to address their substance use and mental health issues. You create opportunities where families can be given opportunity to live in stable housing, devoid of lead, paint, and poison, that the environment obviously is engaged in a way that pollutants don't impact the communities that we come from, causing asthma and all kind of other things, right? So we're talking about public safety. The scope of public safety is broad. And when public safety is not addressed universally and humanely, it keeps people out. And when you keep people out of public safety by dealing with them humanely and creating opportunities for them to live lives of contribution, whether they are have histories of involvement in the criminal legal system or not, you create and generate crime. And you generate threats to public safety. When people are homeless, it generates threats to public safety. When people don't have job opportunities, it generates threats to public safety. When people aren't allowed to address their treatment needs and put in jail and criminalized because of that, it again generates crime and a threat to public safety. So all of those things are to be considered. And in our next segment, obviously, we'll hear from Jeff to talk about the Treatment and Not Jails Act. And I think obviously he'll go maybe into the history of the Rockefeller drug laws and those harsh and draconian punitive kind of laws as it relates to small possessions of crack cocaine versus large amounts of powdered cocaine. And we'll get into some of that stuff. But it's so important that you as a listener continue to understand the importance of advocacy work, the importance of community work, and the importance of analyzing those things, because we should always lead with fact over propaganda, or fact ahead of propaganda. And unfortunately, propaganda is ahead of fact. It's almost like the issue of the truth and the lie, and how the truth and the lie one day went to go in this inside of the pond, and the truth and the lie both took the clothes off, and then the lie jumped out of the pond faster than the truth and put on the truth's clothes and ran away, right, with the truth's clothes. And so that analogy is likened to what's happening now. Like, propaganda has taken on the form of the truth, while, you know, the truth is trying to catch up, right, to kind of expose, like, the propaganda for what it is. So we have to always work, especially as people who are in positions of public trust and media that are amplifying and raising the needs of the people, to make sure that fact is always ahead of propaganda. And here at On the Count in particular, and most of all of the programs on WBAI in general, look to make sure that facts are ahead of propaganda. So we thank you for continuing to support WBAI. We ask that you strongly commit to becoming a WBAI buddy, offering where you can out of your private means, ways to which to support this institution here at WBAI that's been around over 50 years, and to continue to listen to the really amazing programming that WBAI has to offer. I know this is not commercialized radio. I know that you don't have the kind of like commercials where you hear of all these other kind of things that's going on, but we like to deal with facts. And sometimes facts are free of commercial. So you can really get to understanding and really processing and analyzing what you're listening to. So Harmony and Mighty, I know that, you know, you all are really excited too about the support people have already shown, and also agree with people supporting in the best way they can. Harmony, Marty?
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe in support. Absolutely. I believe that if you reach out and deep into your pockets and maybe you only have two and you want to share one, once you give, you will always receive, and you will receive information from WBAI. It's a wonderful place to be supportive to. I've been listening to WBAI for quite some time as well, and giving to the best that I can, even prior to being here on the air. It is an exciting opportunity because, again, it is listener-sponsored. But I just also think that it's not only about the listeners who are outside from on the outside. It is also about the individuals who are listening on at Horizons and Crossroads and Rikers and upstate New York. Shout out to Taconic and Bedford. We know that you guys are listening as well. We know that you guys are still afraid of the COVID virus that has been running a little bit rampant in Taconic. But to you guys as well, the vineyard is open for all of us to do the work. And so I want you to really start to think about and listen as you listen every week, twice a week. I want you to start to think about what is your contribution to this walk and to this journey that we're taking in order to make have an opportunity to be fair and concise with individuals who are incarcerated. So we offer the opportunity as well to write us out a letter, let us know what's going on inside, let us read your letter on the air, and so that we also will be able to assist you, and you also will be contributing to the information that we give in directly from the source. And I think that that too is important. Once again, we thank you for the listeners inside and outside, and your voices are as important as everyone else's voices, and we want to really hear from you. WBAI, you can write on the count at 388 Atlantic Avenue. That's in Brooklyn, New York, 11217. I want to hear from you, and I want to be able to read that information and have that information directly from you. Women, the men, any one of you who want to just take a few moments out to write us a letter and let us air some of the things that you're feeling from the inside and be able to read it to our listeners so they can hear from you. Thank you so much, Marty.
Yes, I think that's wonderful to hear from our listeners. So definitely be encouraged to write to us. We will read your writing and we will comment on it. So please be open-minded and definitely communicate with us, because we are your voices. We are out here representing you, you, and you, as Harmony always says. So please help us help you and get your voice out there by communicating with us. Again, that address is 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. I'm not sure of the zip. But
11217. 11217. Yeah, absolutely. Downtown Brooklyn, folks.
Absolutely. And we want you to write us. And you know, as we're still engaging with going through with COVID-19, you know, we haven't been in the studio as often as we would like. But we do miss the studio. It's nostalgic even. I'm sure Harmony and Marty can agree, right, to be in there. But we want you to write us and to continue to, like, share your thoughts and ideas with us, because it's so important to informing the work that we do. And so we're at the 9:28 mark, and we have been joined by Jeffrey Berman. And Jeffrey Berman is an attorney, and he's doing some really good work. And we want to talk with him about the Treatment Not Jails Act. I know that we normally have a musical selection, and unfortunately we don't have one tonight. Maybe Harmony or Marty could sing, or maybe I can even sing if I don't mess anyone's eardrums up. But we would certainly like to sing something at some point. Maybe not tonight. We would have to probably practice. Maybe Harmony and Marty, we have to practice. Maybe get our chorus and all that together. I could be a backup singer. Maybe Harmony. I don't know. What do you think?
I think we should put it together. I'm sure we'll get a million listeners on that evening, the night that we all decide to do our trio. So we're going to put it together, folks. Stay tuned. But until then, we're going to make sure that we bring Jeff one up so that he can tell us all about the bill. Yes. What do you think, Marty?
Oh, I don't think they want to hear me sing. I really don't think they want to hear me sing, but I'm down to sing. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I think maybe we can sing one of Mark Anthony's songs too, right? I mean, it's obviously Hispanic heritage and Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month. And we will have a few more of our amazing Latinx leaders join us before the ending of the Heritage Month, which is October 15th. But as we always state, Hispanic Latinx Heritage Month is every day, as Latinx folk are living in a world similarly to obviously Black folk in the experiences of oppression and institutional racism and fighting to end oppression and racial injustice. So we're definitely going to have some folk coming up that's going to talk about the work that they're doing in the Latinx community. And we're excited about that. And then maybe we can play some Mark Antonio or someone else, or Celia Cruz or some other folk that we can hear from. But you're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal Reform Report. My name is Andre Ward. I'm joined by my two colleagues, sisters and friends, Harmony and Madi. And for this past 30 minutes, we have been just discussing some commentary and sharing some analysis and some thoughts about the criminal legal reform movement, about Rikers Island, and about what is equally as important, the much needed support we continue to need from you as listeners of this radio station, and by extension, this radio program, and also by engaging in criminal legal reform, by getting connected to whatever organization that is doing that kind of work to support changing the conditions within the criminal legal system. And so we have been talking about that, and we want you to make your pledges. We'd certainly like for you to become a WBAI buddy. You can go on the website at www.wbai.org. You can become a buddy. You can make contributions. You can even make suggestions about what kind of programming you would like to hear on WBAI. Although there is a range of programming on WBAI, the likes of which covers and spans just about every facet of the human experience within society in New York. And so not too many subjects are not covered within that work. So we still welcome those suggestions, because who knows, there may be an area that we here at WBAI may not be covering that's invaluable and that listeners need to be informed about. And we want to make sure that we are representing programming that reflect your interests and your desires that are consistent with human dignity and respect. So make those donations, make those pledges. And so now we'll transition to Jeffrey. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us here at On the Count. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Andre. It's good to be on the show.
Absolutely. And obviously, Jeffrey is no stranger to this work. You know, he's been a lawyer and attorney for many years and just really committed to social justice. And, you know, tonight, you know, we want to talk to him about something that he and others have formed a campaign to address treatment issues in this country and the decriminalization of it by way of alternatives. And so, you know, I'll just get right to it, Jeffrey. I mean, you know, you all started this campaign, reached out to several organizations, recently had a rally at Foyley Square that I heard was really, really powerful and just really struck a chord with people, in that people are very interested in seeing changes within treatment courts and examining the procedures there in terms of like people being like jailed rather than like sent to treatment. And so what opportunities currently exist for people who become involved in the criminal legal system to receive treatment as alternatives to incarceration in New York State?
So first off, Andre, I'm glad that you're calling it a criminal legal system as opposed to a criminal justice system, because we don't feel that there is justice in the criminal legal system. So we're going to call it a criminal legal system. The opportunities for for people who become entrenched in the criminal legal system in New York State are very, very limited. Currently, there is one statute, which is Criminal Procedure Law 216, which is called judicial diversion, that exists, that gives judges the discretion to authorize court-mandated treatment for people who are charged with a limited number of enumerated offenses under that statute. And this law was passed in 2009 as part of the reform of the Rockefeller drug laws. So what that law did is it reduced sentencing ranges for drug offenses. It expanded eligibility for parole supervision. But probably one of the most exciting things that came out of that law at that time in 2009, which was many, many years ago, was judicial diversion. But judicial diversion is extremely limited. What it does is it permits judges to order treatment resulting in a dismissal of the felony charge over a prosecutor's objection if our client is charged with what's called an enumerated offense in New York. And an enumerated offense in Article 216 is a drug offense, a property-related offense, for example, damaging property, a low-level burglary charge, for example, if somebody goes into a Duane Reade and they shoplift, but they were arrested in the past for shoplifting, so that actually upgrades it to a burglary as opposed to a shoplifting. That's a felony for which somebody could get state prison. So these kinds of charges, they're all nonviolent charges, and they're really just a select few charges in the penal law. So if somebody has an enumerated offense and there's a clinical evaluation that's done and the court concludes that the person's substance use disorder, this is a drug court, their substance use disorder is linked to the criminal allegations, then the person can be eligible for drug court, also known as judicial diversion. And that is the only law in the books in New York State that authorizes judges to order judicial diversion. But judicial diversion under Criminal Procedure Law 216 is, again, very, very limited. Number one, it excludes virtually every nonviolent felony charge that exists in the penal law. It excludes all violent felony charges in the penal law. If somebody has previously been convicted of a violent felony, they're excluded unless the prosecutor provides consent. And very, very importantly, if the person has a mental health condition, a serious mental health condition, a neurocognitive disability, intellectual disability, something that the drug courts don't feel that they can handle, then they push, even if the person is otherwise eligible for drug court. What we see happening throughout the state is that judges and prosecutors are pushing these otherwise eligible clients to mental health court, if there is a mental health court in the particular jurisdiction. And the problem with that is, number one, the drug courts should be able to handle and work with people who have mental health conditions, but they're not. And if the case is moved in the direction of a mental health court, then that it's a whole nother ballgame. What needs to happen now is the prosecutors need to consent to have the case go to the mental health court. And how does a prosecutor consent? What's required? Let's talk about what happens in my jurisdiction, Manhattan, with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office puts up every possible roadblock to keep our clients from getting the kind of treatment that they need in the mental health court. And they put our clients through a very, very rigorous, deeply personal, traumatizing experience in order to potentially be accepted into the mental health court. For example, lawyers are expected to turn over voluminous, confidential mental health records to prosecutors. And these are records, just so you know, of our clients who have been psychiatrically hospitalized. These don't tell the story of our clients' lives. They show our clients in their worst moment of crisis because a medical doctor in a psychiatric ER determined that they are a danger to themselves or others. But the prosecutors want to look at those records, and they're looking at those records to find reasons to either not accept our clients for mental health court because they see something in there that bothers them. And really, it's not telling the story of our clients' lives. The other thing that happens is prosecutors are requiring our clients to meet with them in their offices for what's called a proffer session, sometimes up to two proffer sessions. And this is without a plea ever being in place, without any kind of offer being given, without any guarantee that the case will even get to the mental health court. And what happens when our clients go and meet with the prosecutors? Number one, they are required to admit to the charges, even though there's not been a trial, even though there's the privilege against self-incrimination, they are required to admit to the charges. And why is that? It's because the prosecutors, number one, feel that somebody is not deserving of mental health court unless they can take full and total responsibility for what they are alleged to have done. And again, this is without a plea ever having happened. And the second thing that happens is, and by the way, if our clients are denied mental health court, we have seen many examples of where prosecutors then use these records that we turn over against our clients during bail applications where they're asking for higher bail or maybe as a way to seek a higher sentence for our client. But the other thing that happens is our clients are required to tell the stories of their lives to prosecutors who are complete strangers. Our clients are meeting with a total stranger and, you know, because they have no other choice and they're so desperate and they want to get out of jail and they've lost their family and their communities and their jobs and everything that matters to them, they are forced to open up about being the victims of sexual trauma, being the victims of domestic violence. And, you know, this is information that you or I might not even talk to our closest family members or best friends about, but our clients are expected to go in there and open up. It's really like a job interview. And so even after going through this rigorous process, there are no guarantees that our clients are even going to be accepted into the mental health court. So sort of in conclusion, the only statutory authority in New York State that permits a judge to grant court-mandated treatment resulting in a dismissal of the charges is through judicial diversion, which is for a limited number of offenses, and does not want to take people who have serious mental illness or intellectual disability or neurocognitive disability. It's solely about substance abuse disorder.
Got it, Jeffrey. And thank you for that context and just some of that historical kind of background. And so the idea is to fix the limitations of the 2009 judicial diversion, right, and expand these opportunities, right? Is that correct?
It absolutely is. And
so, right. So therefore, that's where Treatment Not Jail Act like comes into play. So speaking specifically about Treatment Not Jail Act legislation, how will the Treatment Not Jail Act legislation fix the limitations of the 2009 judicial diversion and expand opportunities for people seeking treatment-based opportunities as part of their criminal case?
Well, it's going to do a lot. I mean, this bill will become, I think, the most powerful opportunity in the United States of America to allow people who are criminally legally involved to get the treatment they need as part of their legal case. Now, the one thing I want to point out to you, Andre, is that, you know, we have to think about why are people, you know, I'm going to tell you what is included in this bill, but we have to understand that people have gone through their lives, people who end up into the criminal legal system have been victimized by many systems that have led them to criminal legal involvement and to having a life very frequently where they're lacking self-esteem and self-worth and not being given the opportunities that they deserve. They haven't received proper health care in their lives. They haven't received proper education, proper support, proper treatment for mental health. So this bill, the first thing that it does is it expands eligibility for judicial diversion beyond substance use disorders and alcohol dependence to encompass all functional impairments. And that term encompasses mental illness, developmental disability, intellectual disability, traumatic brain injury, or other neurological diseases, cognitive disabilities, dementia, traumatic brain injury, And that's the first thing it does. So we're not only talking about substance use disorders. The legislation, what it does is it just like very similar to judicial diversion, you know, it does require that there is a nexus or there is a link between criminal between the criminal allegations or the criminal behavior and the functional impairment. So there has to be a clinical evaluation done by a healthcare professional or a psychologist or a licensed social worker who is going to, you know, have to show that that link exists. The legislation also, what it does is it expands. Basically, we're no longer going to be talking about this limited number of charges that are eligible for judicial diversion. It's now, it allows any charge under the penal law to be eligible for judicial diversion, including violent charges. And for any naysayers out there who think, who have a bad reaction to thinking, oh, violent charges, we shouldn't allow those in. We need to stop looking to stigma and you know, false perceptions about violence and mental illness. Because the truth of the matter is that people who live with mental illness are 10 times more likely to be victims of violence than the perpetrators of violence. That's a very, very important statistic. And secondly, all of the studies show that people who are charged with violent crimes do just as well in treatment, court-mandated treatment, as people charged with nonviolent charges. So we're going to expand it to include every charge under the penal law. We are also going to make sure that every jurisdiction that mental health, currently, mental health and other treatment courts are not available in most counties in New York State. And many treatment courts have significant barriers to access that prevent some of the people most in need of treatment and support from being able to participate. So, you know, we're going to make sure that every jurisdiction has a mental health court in the state of New York so that everybody can participate. There are three other points to this bill that I think are very, very exciting. Which I'd like to talk about. One of them is that the bill has what's called a pre-plea model. We embrace a harm reduction model, and we also embrace what's called procedural justice.
Yes, and so talk to us about that too. Jeff, when you talk about pre-plea model participants not required to plead guilty, what does that mean? Talk about the harm reduction model, maybe not at length necessary for time's sake, but if you can touch on that a little bit, and then procedural justice. What do those three things mean in particular? Starting with the pre-plea model, participants not required to plead guilty.
So currently, and this is really just the way that our criminal legal system is, it's the nature of our criminal legal system, is there's an expectation of a plea. And so in order to be in judicial, the current iteration of judicial diversion, there is a requirement of a plea, unless exceptional circumstances can be shown that there will be some kind of collateral consequence. However, in practice, judges throughout the state are not utilizing the exceptions part of that. Of Article 216. So we need to change the narrative of how we view legal justice involvement and why people become entrenched in the criminal legal system. And the Treatment Not Jail Act changes that narrative of how we view justice by not requiring our clients to plead guilty in order to access treatment. And again, we call that pre-plea. Offering treatment without the requirement of an upfront plea of guilt removes coercive aspects of our legal system. It addresses and acknowledges that poor people, particularly people of color, sit in jail for months and then plead guilty every day to crimes in order to get out of jail. Our clients sit in jail for multiple months and even years and eventually plead guilty to access treatment. They plead to keep their jobs. They plead to keep their homes, to stay in school so they can return to their loved ones and quite frankly, to get out of jail and to end the nightmare of pretrial detention. So, you know, there was a study by the Center for Court Innovation that concluded that with respect to the Manhattan Mental Health Court, it's on average 331 days from the moment somebody's arrested to the moment they are released from jail into treatment through the Manhattan Mental Health Court. That is just not acceptable. So pre-plea is also about respecting client autonomy and understanding that people should not have to plead guilty in order to access health care, support, and mental health treatment. You know, it's and I like to say this, it's a matter of viewing criminal legal involvement as a public health issue, not as a criminal issue. Because here are the facts. The majority of people who enter into the criminal legal system struggle with a diagnosable condition under the DSM-5. A mental health condition, a substance use disorder, a neurocognitive disability, or other disorders and disabilities. And so if prosecutors in New York State...
Which are caused, Jeffrey, by these systems that you referred to, right?
Exactly,
that shapes
exactly.
And impacts
exactly.
People in this different way. Okay.
That's right. So if prosecutors are going to prosecute people where mental illness or substance dependency played a role in the charges, then we need to view people's legal experience in the legal system as a matter of public health equity. Our clients deserve to be treated to be treated in the new judicial diversion statute without the requirement of a plea, because our clients, again, like you just said, they've already been failed by nearly every system in their lives: child welfare, public health, education, the list goes on. So we can't fail them at this critical moment in the criminal legal system. We need to be generous and humane with people who are arrested due to their disability, because systems have failed our clients during their lives by not providing them with the adequate healthcare and support, which would give them better lives and more self-worth to begin with. Now, very importantly, the pre-plea model is needed because of the collateral consequences our clients face when they plead guilty to a crime. If you're a green card holder, for example, or a non-citizen of the United States, a plea of guilty to a criminal charge could get you deported. It's also important to understand that people with open pleas or criminal convictions, even misdemeanors, face barriers with employment, licensing, housing, education. And these are the systems that can offer stability and support that our clients need in order to stay out of the criminal legal system. So that is the pre-plea model.
Got it, Jeff. And if you can, in like a minute, because we only have like 2 minutes left, and we're going to have you back on, Jeff, for updates on the campaign, et cetera. The harm reduction model piece and procedural justice, if you can do that in a minute, and then we'll like close, and then we'll have you back on.
Sure. So harm reduction encompasses a range of strategies that aims to reduce, that basically seeks to protect our clients. It's a smart range of strategies that will reduce overdose, that will reduce the negative consequences of drug use, alcoholism, and mental illness by addressing the conditions and responses to use and treatment. So what this bill will do in 30 seconds with respect to harm reduction is, we are not going to allow judges to make medical decisions about our clients. We're not going to allow judges to make decisions about what medications they can take. Judges will not be creating treatment plans. That will come from healthcare providers and practitioners and psychologists and clinical social workers. Judges will not put our clients in jail if they have used drugs or alcohol as a punitive response. Judges will not put our clients in jail if they're having some sort of mental health episode in the courthouse or in the courtroom, and will instead turn to clinicians or the possibility of taking somebody to the hospital. So that is harm reduction.
And so obviously, Jeff, and that feeds into procedural justice, right? I'm sure there's this obviously relationship between those things and procedural justice that Tom won't permit us to get into, Jeff. But we want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. And I'm sure Harmony and Madi, we'd love to have you back on for an update on the campaign and what support us here at On the Count can give. We'll do that so that ultimately, as a legislative win around the Treatment Not Jails Act. And I know from what I understand, tomorrow, the Institute for Innovation and Prosecution will be officially launching something that's called A New Approach, A Prosecutor's Guide to Advancing the Public Health Response to Drug Use. So I'll be sure to get that to you, Jeff, like when that comes out as well. It's supposed to be put out tomorrow. They're launching it tomorrow. And if you don't know about it already, I'll make sure I get that to you so you can check that out. There's a relationship, I'm sure, between that and the work that you're doing with the campaign in some way. And so We thank you. And how can folk get in contact with you if you'd like them to, Jeff, or just want to wait till we get back on in the next couple of months or so?
We do have a website for the Treatment Not Jail Coalition. So we have that. Andre, I can also, when we're not on the radio, I can give you some information to hand out to people if you'd like. They can reach out to me.
Yeah, please. If you can send us the information on the website for the Treatment Not Jails Act, send us that website and we'll be able to share with our listeners during the next show. Harmony Mahdi, and again, thanks so much, Jeffrey, for joining us, and we'll have you back on soon. Harmony Mahdi?
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We appreciate you, Jeff. That was a lot of wealth of information. We have it all down, and we appreciate you coming back to fill us in again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to having you on the show again.
And we want to,
and we want to thank you as the listeners for joining us here at On the Count. And obviously, we don't have enough time all the time to cover as much as we'd like to, but we're grateful that WBAI sees value in On the Count to allow us to come on 2 days out the week, and so that we can cover more issues, have more guests, and to inform you, our listeners, to continue to support On the Count, and equally as important, support WBAI. As we say in closing, don't give in, don't give out, don't give up. Stand tall in spite of it all and stay on the
count. Woo! Keep up alive, folks.
On the count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.5 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain the fastest growing industry in the country.
Hello, I'm Max Schmid, member of the WBAI LSB. Yes, WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation board responsible for advising local management and operations, is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m. An election for new board members is underway, with voting continuing until October 15th. All WBAI listener members and staff are urged to vote for the candidates they want to represent them. The LSB October meeting and the one planned for November will deal with current matters before newly elected board members are seated in December. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar or on the WBAI website. That's right, we're not going to razzle-dazzle you or confound you with lots and lots of numbers. You can go to kpftx.org and find the information for access there. And it will also be on the WBAI webpage. That's Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m., the next meeting of the WBAI local station board. And you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York.
2-7-6-4-0-0-0-3. What follows is a WBAI emergency alert. All listeners who are members of WBAI need to vote now in the local station board delegates election. So far, only a tiny percentage of WBAI listener members have voted, and there's very little time to go before all the ballots are due. WBAI is in danger of failing to make the 10% quorum required in this election. If it fails to make a quorum, other members of Pacifica will think that our listeners don't care about WBAI, and we know that's not the case. Don't encourage BAI naysayers who shut down the station 2 years ago. Vote now. If you can't find your email ballot, go to elections.pacifica.org and click on the link for the ballot request form. WBAI needs to make its quorum in this election for local station board delegates. Very little time is left, and we are in danger of failing to make the quorum if you don't.